Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, Russia's Sputnik Radio, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We'll begin with NHK Japan. The Japanese government is trying to decide whether or not to lift the state of emergency in 3 more prefectures while maintaining it in others. The Japanese-made anti-flu drug Avagen is undergoing further clinical trials, though approval is expected this month. A report on the relaxed restrictions in the United States with an extended weekend holiday beginning. At the annual meeting of the World Health Organization, where key topics were developing a COVID vaccine and plans for distribution of medical supplies. Meanwhile, Mike Pompeo and Trump have stepped up criticism of China, blaming it for the spread of COVID. NHK Japan.
The Japanese government has consulted an advisory panel regarding its plan to lift the state of emergency in 3 prefectures in western Japan while maintaining it for the Tokyo metropolitan area and Hokkaido. They'll then inform the Diet of the plan before finalizing it at a task force meeting later in the day. The advisory panel convened on Thursday morning. Infectious disease experts are among the members who have been meeting regularly to discuss the government's policies around the coronavirus. New infections in Osaka, Kyoto, and Hyogo have fallen below 0.5 per 100,000 people in the past week, a benchmark set by the government. Regarding Tokyo and its 3 prefectural neighbors as a group, the rates for Tokyo and Kanagawa currently do not meet the criteria, although Saitama and Chiba do. The northernmost prefecture of Hokkaido also fails to pass the bar. The nationwide declaration of 39 other prefectures was canceled last week. The people of Tokyo and surrounding prefectures, as well as Hokkaido, will continue to be asked to refrain from non-essential outings. Officials say residents in prefectures where the emergency has been lifted should reduce contact between people to minimize infections. In total, more than 16,400 people have tested positive for the coronavirus. Over 780 have died.
The global hunt for coronavirus treatments continues. A Japanese third-party committee assessing the clinical trials of anti-flu drug Avagen reportedly says it's too early to determine whether the drug is effective or not. Clinical trials are being conducted on 86 people infected with the virus with mild or no symptoms. They're divided into 2 groups. One group is given Avagen from the first day in the hospital up to 10 days. The other group is given the drug from the 6th day. Clinical trials are supposed to be assessed by a third-party committee. Sources familiar with the testing say the committee analyzed the midterm results on about 40 people, and they concluded that research needs to continue to have the full picture of its potential effect. The health ministry has said it plans to speed up the process to approve Avagen as a treatment for the coronavirus this month. People across the United States are packing their beach bags and picnic bags ahead of a long holiday weekend. Every state has started to relax restrictions meant to stop the spread of the virus. But public health officials say more people need to get tested. NHK World's Catherine Kobayashi reports.
It's happy hour again at the Iron Hog Saloon. Customers have left their masks at home. They're putting social distancing behind them. It's like nothing has changed.
If people want to quarantine, quarantine. If you don't want to quarantine, don't quarantine. Go out, do what you normally do.
The evidence suggests that may not be the best advice. Many who have been exposed to the virus won't even show symptoms. Others can take 3 to 5 days to feel sick. A viral test tells people if they're infected now. An antibody test tells them if they had a previous infection. But it can take weeks to produce antibodies. And some tests show, incorrectly, that a person has not been infected. The worst symptoms can take almost 3 weeks to appear. So people won't know for a while yet how reopening has affected the spread. Only 3% of the U.S. population has been tested, but New York State has been more aggressive, carrying out 40,000 a day. The governor says the most important thing people can do to fight the virus is to test for it. Many Americans will get together this weekend for Memorial Day to honor military personnel who died while serving. In gathering, some may be making a sacrifice of their own. Catherine Kobayashi, NHK World, New York.
The annual assembly of the World Health Organization has started and is being held by a video conference amid the coronavirus pandemic. Representatives of the 194 member countries are taking part in the two-day online meeting. Key issues include developing a vaccine for the coronavirus and international coordination in distributing medical supplies.
The risk remains high, and we have a long road to travel.
The United States has accused the WHO of being too close to China. Washington is demanding a detailed investigation into the organization's initial response to the outbreak. Chinese President Xi Jinping gave a speech at the opening ceremony. He defended his country's handling of the crisis.
All along, we have acted with openness, transparency, and responsibility. We have provided information to the WHO and relevant countries in a most timely manner.
Xi pledged $2 billion over 2 years to help developing countries combat the coronavirus.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has stepped up his criticism of China, blaming the government for widespread damage caused by the global coronavirus pandemic. Pompeo told reporters on Wednesday China was ruled by, quote, a brutal authoritarian regime.
China's contributions to fighting the pandemic are paltry compared to the costs that they have imposed on the world.
Pompeo went on to denounce World Health Organization Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. He said the director general's unusually close ties to Beijing, which predate the pandemic, were deeply troubling. President Donald Trump also ramped up his rhetoric. He tweeted, quote, "It was the incompetence of China and nothing else that did this mass worldwide killing." In the United States, where coronavirus infections continue to spread, many people, particularly Republican Party supporters, are starting to ask questions about China's role in the pandemic. Democrats suggest Trump's growing China criticism is aimed at deflecting criticism of his own response to the outbreak ahead of the November presidential election.
Those reports were from NHK Radio Japan. They have altered their schedule and format and are now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at 5975, 7245, and 11970, or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. Next, Sputnik Radio. On his program, George Galloway interviewed Alan MacLeod about his new book called Propaganda in the Information Age. They discuss media and journalists ignoring stories rather than writing false narratives, and their lack of questioning government leaders. Alan says that the elite are creating the outlook, often contrary to the interest of the people, and that the lack of reporting on Venezuela and the government on the pandemic are examples. Social media giants Google and Facebook are limiting the scope of what most people see in an era called the information age. Sputnik Radio.
Manufacturing consent, the role of propaganda in the information age, has never been more difficult. I think even when the message, even when the consent that's being asked for is necessary and that the message is truthful. It seems to me that the states are more and more taking a reliance on censorship and non-reportage rather than false or misleading reports. But one man who should know better than me is the man that's just written a book called Propaganda in the Information Age, Still Manufacturing Consent. He's Alan McLeod of Mint Press and of the Grey Zone Project, two of the finest independent outfits out there. He's a countryman of mine. In fact, he's in Glasgow, where I used to be the MP. Alan McLeod is his name.
When we talk about propaganda, we often think about enemy states like the USSR or North Korea. But in fact, propaganda is much more important in democracies where you cannot control people with force. You have to control people by getting them to think about certain things and getting them to think about certain topics, what is possible, what is impossible, what is practical, what is impractical. And so, in fact, propaganda is much more nuanced and much more advanced in democracies like in Western Europe or North America than it is in these authoritarian states. So the government has been completely incompetent over the past few months in terms of how they've dealt with the coronavirus and what sort of messages they're putting out. But even as this is happening, even as thousands of people, tens of thousands of people are dying in the UK, where are the journalists who are really standing up to these political figures and saying, what are you doing? You should be resigning. You should be under scrutiny. Very few of them are doing that. Most of them are literally parroting the government line. In fact, the BBC, a senior journalist, revealed that they have decided to get on board with the government, not question them too much in the sense of what they call the national interest. They're going to put aside journalistic values like it's the World War II or something.
You've just written about the situation in Venezuela. Nobody really gave a version of why Britain froze the sovereign assets of Venezuela and then gave them to a notional government that has no democratic bona fides at all, the so-called President Juan Guaido. Nobody tried to argue that. They just did it and then ignored it. Nobody really even reported it. 99.9% of the British people don't even know that it happened, though it happened in the Bank of England. The recent coup attempt in Venezuela, which caught red-handed the United States deep state as the author of the operation, kind of Bay of Piglets. Again, this is just completely ignored by the British media, rather than an attempt to sell a story.
There are certain stories that it just doesn't do to mention in polite company, George. And this is one of them. For decades, the United States, helped by the United Kingdom as well, I have to say, has been overthrowing governments across the world, particularly in the global south. And this latest botched bad Rambo movie that's just happened in Venezuela is another of them. It makes our government, the United States government, the military look extremely bad, extremely incompetent. And if more people knew about it, they might start questioning what our role is in the world and what our role should be. And so I don't think people at the top of society, at the top of big corporate media channels and outlets, really want people knowing about this, questioning what their government is doing, because it might lead to a society where people start questioning more things.
Now, the information age is a crucial qualifier in the title of your book, because once upon a time, I would not be presenting this show and you would not be on it, because the range of outlets, platforms was so limited. But now you're a very well-known writer, writing for very well-known outfits, and I'm interviewing you. That sums up the government's, any government's problem, isn't it? That the proliferation of platforms and microphones for the likes of you and me make it increasingly difficult to control.
Yes, I mean, there's no doubt that the internet and social media have given people with alternative views a huge outlet to reach possibly even a global audience. And some of the people have been very successful at that. But I would warn you that most of the stuff we read online and on social media tends to just be the online arm of old legacy media outlets. We're going to the bbc.co.uk, we're looking at the New York Times, we're looking at CNN. Most people are not actually looking at independent media when they go online. And furthermore, the introduction of algorithms which show us what big corporations think we want to see is further limiting our perspective of the world. So I think we really have to push back against this sort of corporate takeover of the internet, which is seeing alternative voices sidelined, delegitimized, relegated to the margins. In the last few years, we've seen a sort of re-shuttering of the internet, where algorithms have changed the way search engines work, social media has worked, which is pushing alternative voices, like yours, for instance, to the sidelines, and is re-elevating all these old media that we have been fed for decades. We're seeing the death of one style of media, a moribund old media, and the birth of a new one. So the advertising revenue for newspapers, for instance, has gone down 65% in the last 10 years. And likewise, the amount of people actually working in newsrooms for newspapers has gone down the same. The average age of a newspaper buyer continues to rise year on year. And so I think I would agree with you that newspapers are on the way out. What's actually going to replace this old media system of television, which increasingly, certainly young people don't really tune into radio, the same thing. What's going to replace that is the big question. Whether it's going to be a more pluralistic world where there's thousands of different opinions we can go to, or whether it's going to be more of the same, but perhaps even more concentrated than before because of the stranglehold that big advertising companies like Google and Facebook have over the net and who they actually give the resources, the precious money to. You know, they really decide right now what media companies fail and what media companies succeed. So we've got a huge fight on our hands in the next 5 to 10 years to see what kind of media system we're going to have in the mid-21st century.
Thank you very much, Alan McLeod in Glasgow of The Grey Zone and Mint Press.
That interview is by George Galloway on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production costs of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Almost all the funding this freely distributed program receives is from individual listener donations. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help me keep it going, like a listener to KZYX in Mendocino County did this week. If you're interested in how I created the Shortwave Report 24 years ago, I was the guest on a recent edition of a podcast called Humboldt Lighthouse. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. The Venezuelan government released a document sent to Juan Guaido billing him $1.5 million for interest on invasion services by Silvercorps USA. Trump has given the World Health Organization 30 days to change its ways or funding will be permanently cut. Mike Pompeo threatened the International Criminal Court if they continue a war crimes investigation into Israeli actions in Palestine. Palestine has terminated all agreements with Israel and the United States. Then a viewpoint on Libya, where mercenary troops keep arriving from all over the globe to support the warring factions. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The Venezuelan government has released another document that proves the link between right-wing leader Juan Guaido and the armed incursion of May the 3rd, which was intended to attack President Nicolas Maduro. 5 days before this armed incursion was carried out, the firm Folk Law, located in the U.S. state of Florida, sent a letter to Juan Guaido for the overdue payment of $1.5 million owed to the company Silvercore USA for the contract signed between the leader and the general manager of the company, Jordan Grotheau, to execute, among other violent plans, the assassination or kidnapping of President Nicolas Maduro. In the letter by the legal firm Folk Law in Florida, sent on April the 28th, the law firm details that the commitment assumed by Silvercore contemplated an initial payment of $1.5 million within 5 days after the signing of the General Services Agreement. Juan Guaido neglected to send them the money. U.S. President Donald Trump has given the World Health Organization 30 days to change its ways, or he'll permanently cut off funding and officially leave the Global Health Agency. In what some observers called a scene out of the Old West, Sheriff Donald Trump gave the organization until sundown to straighten up or get out of Dodge. In April, U.S. President Donald Trump, the sheriff, ordered that the funding of the World Health Organization by the United States be halted, following his administration's accusation against the agency of being China-centric. U.S. President Donald Trump has shared on his Twitter account what he called a self-explanatory letter, now sent to the World Health Organization, in which he has threatened to make the funding freeze permanent and reconsider our membership in the organization if the agency does not commit to a major improvement within the next 30 days. The World Health Organization has insisted repeatedly that the response to the pandemic was given timely and accurately. China, in turn, has vehemently denied all accusations of concealment and downplayed the COVID-19 threat. China is slamming these allegations as politicized, releasing a document which it says dispels the myths spread by the U.S. media and politicians. China was also the first country to have the majority of COVID-19 patients recovered and restrictions lifted. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has threatened that Washington will enact consequences if the International Criminal Court, the ICC, moves ahead with a potential war crimes investigation into Israel. Pompeo's warning came after the ICC prosecutor decided to consider Palestine a state with the ability to submit complaints that would trigger probes into war crimes, it says Israel committed in the occupied West Bank and besieged Gaza Strip. In December, the ICC chief prosecutors announced that a 5-year preliminary examination of the situation in the state of Palestine had provided her with reasonable basis to believe that war crimes were committed by Israel. Before launching the investigation, the Hague-based court confirmed that the ICC, the International Criminal Court of Justice, had jurisdiction over alleged offenses committed by Israel. In a critical statement over the weekend, Pompeo, the U.S. Secretary of State, described the investigations as illegitimate and deemed the International Tribunal a political body, not a judicial institution. The United States and Israel are reportedly coordinating a joint campaign against the International Criminal Court at The Hague, both facing potential war crimes at the International Court of Justice. Palestinians have terminated all agreements with Israel and the United States amid Tel Aviv's intention to extend its sovereignty over Palestinian lands. The head of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, announced on Tuesday that he has repeatedly warned Israel that he will tear up any bilateral agreements with the Jewish state if Tel Aviv attempts to further extend its rule over parts of the West Bank, a possibility now left open by Israel's new unity government. The agreements include a series of documents signed in the 1990s during the Israeli-Palestinian peace talks and the conflict resolution process over 20 years ago, among which are the Oslo Accords and the 1997 Hebron Protocol. The Palestinian leader, Mahmoud Abbas, called on Israel to bear full responsibility to the international community from now on as an occupying force of the occupied territory of Palestine. Abbas also insisted on the accession of the State of Palestine to international organizations and institutions in which we are not yet included. He said the move takes place amid plans by Tel Aviv to extend its sovereignty over parts of the West Bank, an intention that is backed by the Donald Trump administration in Washington, strongly condemned by Palestinians and most of the international community, with the exception of the United States. Mahmoud Abbas slammed the United States, accusing the Donald Trump administration of injustice towards the Palestinian people. Now the Palestinians have withdrawn from all agreements, all previous agreements with Israel and the United States.
The confusing and bloody war that has taken over Libya since the deposition and further assassination of the leader Muammar al-Gaddafi 9 years ago by a Western coalition continues to unfold in the region, now with the arrival of mercenary troops from every corner of the globe. France, supported by the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, led the intervention that destroyed a country that back then constituted the most thriving and stable nation in Africa and placed it back in the Middle Ages. Amid the chaos, two groups decided to contend for power. One of them is the so-called Libyan National Army, led by Marshal Khalifa Haftar, who controls the eastern territory and was Gaddafi's right-hand man until he was recruited by the CIA. Its main opponent is the Government of National Accord, formed under the terms of the Libyan Political Agreement, a United Nations-led initiative, but without real power outside Tripoli, the capital, which has been under the unsuccessful siege of Haftar's troops since last year. Apart from that, there are numerous gangs that perform all kinds of criminal activities, such as attacks on the civilian population, robberies, kidnappings, drug and migrant trafficking, who are further abused by labor or in a sexual way, or sold as slaves in black markets. Stephanie Williams, a temporary representative for the UN in Libya, denounced this Tuesday before the Security Council the constant entry of mercenary troops to the country in order to strengthen one or the other group, which keeps the conflict active despite the COVID-19 pandemic. Williams also said, both sides receive modern and sophisticated weapons from abroad, including drones, anti-aircraft systems, and other lethal instruments created to kill. This suggests that the conflict will gain intensity instead of diminishing and adds suffering to the civilian population caught in a war that started under the absurd pretext of establishing democracy and freedom. What happens in Libya today is a clear example of the actual meaning of these terms for the Western powers, particularly for the United States. It's another representation of the legendary troops of Attila the Hun. Every territory they passed by, the grass never grew again. It's also an example of what could happen in Venezuela if the White House succeeds in its plans. While brothers kill each other, Washington sneakily takes the oil and the rest of its national resources.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's web stream worked well this week at their website, radiohc.cu, and their podcast links are fixed and working great. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You could use a shortwave radio at home. It's far simpler than you might think, except for the interference you will pick up from your electronic devices. If you use the internet, listening globally is easier and noise-free. See the links at this program's website. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 24th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.